Remarks on the Sympathies of Human Nature. Man is a highly sympathetic being. How frequently we have seen whole congregations in tears when a speaker addressed them on some sympathetic subject. The suffering of Jesus in the garden and his sufferings upon the cross have drawn millions of teardrops from millions of unregenerate eyes. Men, and especially women, are much disposed to sympathies with objects of distress. In the house of mourning we have heard the spontaneous sob of bitter grief arise from nearly the whole assembled multitude when beholding the convulsed sorrow of a bereaved husband or wife, father or mother, brother or sister, son or daughter. Oh, how copiously did the tears flow when the shroud was removed and the friends and relatives were permitted to look for the last time upon the pale, cold face of the deceased and to bid a long adieu to the remains of a much-loved, a long-cherished friend. At that dark moment, what vibrations did they feel running along all the cords of their sensibility? What a gush of sorrow from their bosoms! What a susceptibility of tender emotions! If they had had enmity against the deceased, it seemed all then gone, and kindness in the place of it had filled their hearts. How often has the hand of the unregenerate been extended while a tear of real pity stood in his eye to the wretched sons and daughters of poverty? We know that the world has been inundated by depravity, and we are far from being disposed to cry, "Peace, peace," when there is no peace. We are neither disposed by any view which we may take of human nature to exaggerate nor to diminish in relation to its goods or evils. We wish to behold it as it is, and to represent it as it presents itself to us, not in the airy regions of romance, but in real life. And viewing it in this way, we must say that we have been often delighted with the elevated principles which it is continually exhibiting in the unregenerate as well as the regenerate. We have seen these principles developed in families and neighborhoods, in the infant and in the aged, and we believe that until they are more highly appreciated than they can be by the advocates of total hereditary depravity, human nature will suffer a proportionate loss. The exquisitely refined susceptibilities and sympathies of human nature are obvious in all our religious impressions and emotions. Through our sympathies, the cross affects us with omnipotent power. We sympathize with a suffering Savior. His love inflames our sensibilities. His bleeding wounds pour tenderness and contrition into our souls. Frequently we catch the sympathetic glow from some penitent sinner who may be near in the congregation. The cross of Jesus, it may be, subdues an impenitent mother. She advances to confess the Lord. The impenitent son or daughter beholds her tearful eye and heaving bosom, and lo, a sympathetic dart reaches the soul of one or both of them, and they too bow, willing, broken-hearted penitents under the august truths of the gospel. We have seen whole congregations thus melted into contrition, and we have no doubt but that thousands of souls in glory will bless the Lord eternally for that religion by which their sympathies were aroused and by which they were enlisted in the cause of life and salvation. So easily may man be operated upon through his sympathies that in various situations he is by them exposed to serious evils. In noisy religious meetings we have seen scores of persons convulsed by the roar of fanatical preachers and a few of their fanatical followers. The people would perhaps seem cold and lifeless through a principal part of the meeting, the preachers would become impatient, and even murmur in consequence of the lukewarmness of their auditors. Presently, a man famous for stirring the sympathies of human nature with ghastly countenance and agnostic gesture would harangue them. "Brethren," he would say, "give us a shout in the camp." Immediately some of the more susceptible, perhaps the more weak-minded of the sisterhood, would raise their treble voices in obedience to the preacher, in piercing, sometimes in heart-rending screams. The preachers themselves would descend among the people, and by stentor-like vociferations, stunning stamps on the floor, and loud clapping of their hands, produce an order of things which is perfectly inconceivable to those who have not witnessed such fanatical exhibitions. You might now see females falling in namelessly indecent attitudes, others males and females taken with what is called the laughing exercise, some with the dancing exercise, others with the jerks, some singing, others praying, others exhorting. Every scream was fuel to the flame of enthusiasm. Thus we have frequently seen human nature wrought upon, and we use it as an illustration of the power of the human sympathies and of our wonderful susceptibility through them. To the honor, however, of the inhabitants of the United States be it spoken, that scenes of fanaticism such as we have just described do not often present themselves except in new settlements where the people are not well informed. But it is not necessary that we should dwell long upon cases of extreme excitations of human sympathy in order to the appreciation of this subject. We are warranted in saying that any person who will for a short time bring the operations of his mind and his heart under his strict and candid observation will be convinced of his wonderful susceptibility of being operated upon through the medium of his sympathies. In this respect, we may be assimilated to a musical instrument. The refined and innumerable sensibilities of our nature are the musical strings upon which, through our senses, objects earthly and heavenly continually play, and upon which, as upon a violin, may music earthly and heavenly with equal facility be made. With the same facility with which we feel the refreshing zephyrs of spring or the biting blasts of winter, do we also feel the good and evil influences which are continually operating upon us from the multiplied and multiform objects which surround us. Let the reader walk into the garden or into the fields on a beautiful morning in spring. All nature will seem emulous to please him. The flowers will put forth their richest perfumes and most beautiful tints. The lambkins will frisk and leap along the smooth surface of the green meadow. The grove, but recently clothed with its beautiful foliage, will become vocal with the music of a thousand feathered songsters. Nature will appear to have obtained a resurrection from the dead of winter, and the heavens and the earth will, from 10,000 sources, pour such exhilarating springs of spirit-refreshing influences into his soul as will either make him happy or miserable. Happy, if his conscience is void of offense, but perhaps miserable if guilt hangs heavily upon his soul. In either case, it will convince him what a very susceptible creature he is. How refined, how intense the sympathies of mothers! Ah, could we but hear the sympathetic whisperings of a maternal heart! Could we but feel for one moment as mothers feel when they look upon the fair and innocent face of their lovely babes! Could we but feel the ecstasy which the infantile smile brings in the warm heart of a mother, or the pangs of that tenfold sorrow which convulses her bosom when her babe sickens and dies! Could we enter into all her little maternal sentiments and feelings, her hopes and fears, her joys and sorrows, it would be more convincing, it would be more instructive than a thousand volumes. We challenge the world here. Yes, we say, here is a volume, the volume of a mother's heart, that refutes all the gloomy croakings of the sticklers for total hereditary depravity. Come ye, read it, and be wise. Daughters of America, we beseech you to read this sympathetic volume, and then tell us whether that maternal heart which winds itself by a thousand sympathetic fibers around yonder smiling cherub is totally depraved. Ah, superstition, how hast thou darkened almost every prospect! How hast thou bewildered and rendered irrational myriads of our race! Thou lookest upon the smiling face of an unconscious babe, and beholdest naught but satanic depravity. Thou lookest into the heart of the affectionate mother as she presses her babe to her bosom, and pronouncest each affectionate emotion to be but the workings of black corruption. Thou art the spider of the mind. Thou convertest the sweetest fruits and the fairest flowers into poisons. But thou art hastening to thy sepulchre. Thy days are numbered.